Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is honored to be presented again this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. For more than 48 years, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. And their experienced team can walk you through the car buying process side by side from test drive to service oil changes and beyond. Townsend goes through a rigorous vetting process to make sure that every pre-owned vehicle adheres to quality standards. And right now, there's plenty on the lot to choose from in various makes and models. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Automotive salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. Supply chain is a buzz phrase right now. But let's not forget that one, there isn't just one chain, and two, that it's not a faceless thing. It's people. Mark Overbay of Big Spoon Roasters in Durham, North Carolina, was inspired by the unavailable supply of peanut butter when he was stationed in the Peace Corps. And that inspiration has led him down plenty of paths to sweet success. Big Spoon's philosophy is based on the belief that food matters when it comes to health, happiness, and the well-being of our planet. And that planet includes all those who are working to produce his products. Simply by doing what they love. The company, which Mark named in homage to his dad, Gary, has created numerous product innovations, including being the first to incorporate creative ingredients from chai spices to freshly toasted coconut, being the first to offer membership clubs, and currently still the only nut butter company with a completely transparent supply chain. Big Spoon Roasters is available in close to 800 U.S. retail outlets. And Mark, he's still eating peanut butter on the daily. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Mark.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, Stephanie.
Well, I'm so glad. And I only allow people that have food products on the show if they actually give me the food products as a gift. Just kidding, Southern Fork listeners. But Mark did bring me two of the most popular flavors of Big Spoon Roasters nut butter. This is the Fiji ginger and the chai spice. So you're already blowing my Southern mind by the idea that we can have flavored butters, right? So, I mean, we were just sitting talking about literature off mic because we're both nerds. So we just wanted to go ahead and admit that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I want to know, I always ask this of somebody who goes into something super specific like this. What sent you down the nut butter rabbit hole?
This business and making nut butters is definitely it's an organic extension of my life and my interests and my passions. I after college, I worked as a journalist in Seattle for a little magazine, and I got really into cooking, and I'd started a cooking club in college, and I was just like an enthusiastic cook. I just loved it. I was obsessed with cooking. And while I was in Seattle, I applied to Peace Corps service and was assigned to Zimbabwe, which is a country in sub-Saharan Africa, border South Africa, Botswana. And I was in a really rural area in southern Zimbabwe, no electricity, no running water. I was teaching at a small school. And peanut butter was one of my favorite foods my entire life. I mean, I ate it almost every day. And I missed peanut butter so much when I was in the Peace Corps. There's nowhere to buy it. It just didn't really exist. And I couldn't buy a lot of things that I missed. But peanut butter, I craved more than anything.
It's really just not that much of a substitute for it.
No.
Like if you grow up on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, peanut butter and banana sandwiches, you just really, there's nothing that takes that craving spot.
That's right. There's something about peanut butter. I mean, there's obviously the nostalgia factor of childhood and PB&Js and peanut butter and crackers. There's something about, for me, that roasty, little salt, little sweetness, that combination with the, you know, the healthy fats that bring it all together. You don't know that it's healthy when you're a kid, but I'm so used to talking about the healthy fats that I have to throw that in there. But I was so happy to find out that the community where I lived in Zimbabwe, they grew a type of peanut. They call them groundnuts there. Mm-hmm. And it's a variety really closely related to the runner variety that grows so well here in the American South.
I wonder how that got here.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep. And it was a really important crop for the local community because it's a source of protein. Everyone there was a subsistence farmer, again, with the healthy fats. Most people grew them and harvested them by hand in like backyard plots and roasted them over open fires. There was, again, you know, no other way to cook really. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just ate them out of the shell, like ballpark peanuts. But some people also shelled them and then with stones, like a mortar and pestle, would crush them into a thick paste and then stir that into usually savory stews that they would eat with the staple starch, which is like really thick grits.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious.
And really, peanuts and nuts are a staple of African food culture,
yes,
just as a continent. But you're talking about a very specific region.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Peanuts are actually indigenous to the Americas, South America, Peru, Brazil, and then made their way to Africa and then back again. And they've become more of a staple in Africa than in South America, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I saw them crushing the peanuts with stones, and I immediately thought that is just like one step away from peanut butter. And I got so excited, and I bartered for some peanuts and the same setup. I used somebody's stones, and I roasted and crushed and crushed and crushed. And let me tell you, it is labor intensive to make peanut butter that way. I mean, it took over an hour to make a tiny little batch, and I mixed in a little honey that I had and a little sea salt because I wanted that like sweet salty combination.
Right.
And then to help it all emulsify together, I put in a little bit of coconut oil, like a thimbleful that I had. And not to toot my own horn, but it was one of the best things I'd ever tasted.
You were like, this satisfies it.
I mean, granted, I hadn't had peanut butter in almost a year, and I was really hungry by the time I finished that first little batch. But still, it was so good. And I joke sometimes that this whole business, this whole pursuit has been just chasing that experience and trying to get that in a jar. And I did realize at that moment, it might sound hokey, but it really changed the way that I thought about all packaged food. You know, I'd mentioned that I started really getting into cooking after college, but I didn't really start making my own pantry goods. Like I didn't start making my own mustard and hummus and.
Well, I didn't know that. I never really thought about that. I think hummus was the first time that I thought about that. And I came at it from a waste perspective. And the fact that I had hummus in a really good way in a restaurant, and I was like, this is not that. So I don't need these 40 bowl containers, and I can have something like that. But yeah, we don't think about pantry items. I mean, a couple generations ago we did, but we definitely don't now, right?
That's right. That's right. And for me, it boiled down to three things. I mean, I've thought about this so much, but with care. So you have to care about what you're doing, great ingredients, great fresh ingredients, which I had, and then craft. And I use that word to mean more than just like the physicality of a craft, but also knowledge, like knowing like
when, technique,
like when is a nut roasted too much? When is it not roasted enough? And when is it too much honey? Or is that honey too strong? Do you need a different honey? Do you need the salt to be really big flakes, or you want them to be really small particles? So that sort of like knowledge and craft, I think with those three things, you can make any food incredible. And, you know, these billion-dollar companies that make nut butter every day by the hundreds of thousands of jars, they don't make a version nearly as good as what I made with a couple of stones and a fire.
Right, right. Okay, what year was that?
1999.
Okay, so I was teaching. You were in the Peace Corps. It's 22 now. You've just been chasing that, and there are so many people that listen to the Southern Fork podcast who have an aunt or a mom or a recipe themselves, and they think, this is so good, I'm going to bottle it. I'd love to chat with you about that first excitement of bottling, because this is a super established company. So that feeling of, oh my gosh, I'm going to get this in a jar.
I started making nut butter again 10 years after I got back from the Peace Corps, because for 10 years I had been trying to find a version that even approached what I made.
And did you go to the little small grocery store that was like independent at that time and get that dispenser thing?
Oh, I ground my own peanut butter everywhere. I would drive, you know, 30, 45 minutes to go to just a different natural food co-op or something, mm-hmm. to try to find a better peanut butter, a better nut butter. And 10 years of doing that, and I remembered my experience in Zimbabwe, and I was like, I just got to start making my own. Mm-hmm. And then when I did one day and shared it with Megan, my then girlfriend, now wife and business partner, she was thrilled. She's like, my gosh, you know, this is so good. You got to share this with other people. And I shared it with some friends and family, and everybody was so encouraging. And I had some mentors in the food business because I was working for a coffee company at the time, and they were also super encouraging. But I'd never seen myself as an entrepreneur before that.
Mm-hmm. This is such a great idea, because it is a simple thing, like, you know, crushing nuts, roasting nuts, adding a sweetness and some saltiness. But that gets really complicated when you're trying to bring it to market, right?
It does get complicated, but in my opinion, it's easy to overcomplicate it as an approach. And I've tried so hard not to do that. So when we started Big Spoon Roasters at one farmer's market, at the Carrboro Farmer's Market at the beginning of 2011, we did not try to go out and raise money. We did not try to, you know, get a bunch of financial support so that I could buy industrial equipment and build a building.
Such a great farmer's market too.
Amazing farmer's market. I bought a little nut mill and then had the milling plates customized so that they created a coarser grind, because that's what I liked. And that's what I was able to do with stones in Zimbabwe that I couldn't find in a jar here. And I rented out bakery space in downtown Durham at night in what's now 9th Street Bakery and Loaf Bakery, and used their equipment. And I hand jarred every single jar with a single spoon and a canning funnel. And that's how we filled every jar for about 6 years. And, you know, I hired one person to help and then a second person and a third person.
I think I had
person.
One of those jars in the first 6 years.
Yeah.
I know that I did. Yeah.
And I had to teach myself how to do it left-handed and right-handed because my shoulders would get so sore. But my point is that, yeah, it can seem really complicated to get that into a jar, but it doesn't have to be.
I love that. I like that kind of course correction that you're providing us here, because we always think things have to be so perfect before we begin, right? So you're filling this, and the reaction at the Carrboro Farmers Market must have been pretty good.
It was pretty good. It was also challenging. Like, I had a lot of people come up to the table with a little bit of attitude to say, why should I pay $10 for a jar of this peanut butter? Why should I pay $12 for the jar of this peanut pecan butter? Mm-hmm. I love those conversations because, first of all, I'm like, well, please taste it. Here's a free taste, no strings attached. I'm really trying to make a better version of peanut butter here, a better version of nut butter, a fresh, made to order, you know, truly sustainable, transparent product. I made this myself with my own hands, roasted the nuts, mixed it, sourced the honey, sourced the salt. You know, please taste it. If you don't like it, it's totally cool. You know, go about your way, buy some kale. But most people who tasted it had a little bit of a, oh, wow, aha response. Mm-hmm. Like, that is super fresh. I can taste the fresh roast on those peanuts. And usually they were willing to pay a little bit more for that. And the people that liked it right off the bat became loyal customers that are, they're still buying our products to this day. I know some of them.
And also advocates.
And advocates.
For, I mean, when you like something, you tell other people and you serve it. So when it became more of a manufactured product, because this is in, I mean, how many outlets?
I think we're in close to 800 retailers in the U.S.
So you're not using the spoon and you're not using the canning funnel. So how did you maintain the quality?
We maintain quality by scaling a very simple technique and technologies. And I use the word technology literally because I think of like grinding as a technology. I think of heating nuts as a technology. But we still roast nuts the same way I did when I started, you know, renting out bakery space at night. And our nut mill has the same kind of, you know, stainless steel milling plates as the first little one we had. It's just a little bit bigger. And now our nut mill is adjustable, so we can grind some nuts a little finer than others when we want to. And then we have just a very simple piston-driven jar filler that works with gravity. And, you know, we make and mix our nut butter and pour it into a hopper, and somebody sits there and fills every jar one at a time. Yes, we're in a lot of retailers now comparatively, but we're still so tiny compared to the industry as a whole. And, you know, a batch of nut butter for us is only about 100, 120 jars. And we make more of those batches in a day than we used to, but it's still very much a handcrafted process.
Well, you know, this whole prepared foods area is exploding. And I think it was already mounting before the pandemic, but the idea of the pandemic has pushed many, many people. And I've been at Fab conference, which is right down the road, a couple blocks away from where we are sitting in the Renaissance Charleston Hotel, who's so graciously always given me boardrooms to have podcasts in. But there's so many people that are doing prepared foods, and I'm a little nervous about losing our way in the specialty foods market. Are you seeing some interesting things?
I definitely see cycles and waves. And having worked also in coffee before started this business, I was at Counterculture Coffee, which I still love their coffee so much, based in Durham, for about 7 years before we started Big Spoon Roasters. And I had a lot of exposure to the specialty food world through the coffee lens as well. And I see a lot of investment by like venture capital and just investors in general in, consumer packaged good brands right now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of trends, and that's always happened. And I think it always will happen, but nut butter is definitely having a trend moment right now where you're seeing a lot of regional brands pop up. A lot of
TikTok videos with Vitamixes.
Absolutely. and you know, a lot of these terms that, for better or worse, are not regulated by FDA. I don't know if they should be, but, you know, like handcrafted, small batch, all natural, you know, these terms are slapped on, you know, any product.
They don't mean anything.
They don't mean anything. And, you know, we use those words because they literally describe how we do things. But I have a lot of sales conversations with, you know, markets all over the country. Like, small independent specialty markets are like the backbone of our business, and we sell to many wonderful shops around the country. And a conversation I have a lot is, you know, why should I bring in your product when, you know, I've got this new one that just started in our state, and maybe that new one is awesome and maybe they're doing things really beautifully. But I always just try to stick with what we do and what we do well. And I describe our process. And, you know, one of the things I ask a lot of these buyers is, does that company actually make their own product. Because a lot of what I'm seeing in the trends of nut butter right now are companies that don't produce their own product. They
so
work
that's
with,
known as co-packer.
Known as co-packing or co-manufacturing or white labeling. I'm sure there are great people that work in that industry, and I have nothing against how they make a living. It's just, it's interesting to me the way some of those products are marketed is that you would never know that they're co-packed because they're presented as an artisan, quote unquote, craft product.
Right. So just for Southern Fork listeners, we're kind of doing an inside baseball moment here on the specialty food market supply chain. But if you shop at Trader Joe's, those are all presented as Trader Joe's, but those are, Trader Joe's doesn't have a factory for salsa. It doesn't have a factory for, you know, Thai peanut sauce. So those are called white label or co-packing. Yes.
That's right. Good example, because Trader Joe's approached us a few years ago about making some nut butters for them. And, I mean, we just can't do the, number one, we don't do white labeling or co-packing, but even if we did, we couldn't have done the scale that they wanted. And we're approached more and more by businesses that have an idea for nut butters and they want us to make it and put their label on it. It's just amazing to me. And I tell our team all the time that, you know, we're not going to get into that business because we work so hard at what we do, at sourcing ingredients, at training our team, mm-hmm. At developing the craft that everybody has to apply to our process in order to make a great product, that I really want our team to be able to enjoy not only the rewards, but also the credit, the public credit for doing the job that they do.
And that's the Big Spoon Roaster's name.
That's right.
That's right. So before we go any further, I want to make sure that we talk about sourcing, because just as in coffee, sourcing is extremely problematic. And not to mention that some peanut butters, commercially commodity peanut butters, are being pulled off the market right now for some issues. And those usually start not in the factory. They usually start in the field. And then it just gets worse from there. So peanuts, sure, they're grown in the South. We know Jimmy Carter. We know peanuts. We get that. But what about the other nuts? And talk to me about working with farmers directly.
Sure. Well, ingredient sourcing is an area that I spend a lot of time personally in. And it's something that I think really sets us apart for the amount of work we put into that. We take a lot of pride in each and every ingredient that we source and have direct relationships with pretty much everyone who either grows or produces the ingredients that we use. One of the nut butters I brought you today is our Fiji ginger almond butter. It's one of our best sellers, and it's a good, I think, starting point for this conversation, because when I first wanted to work with almonds, I didn't know what kind of almonds to use. I didn't know that much about almonds. I'd started out working with just peanuts and pecans. And so I did some research and started just tasting almonds and calling like the California Almond Board and getting in touch with almond growers. And I kept coming across this variety called Mission, the Mission Almond, which was an heirloom discovered in Texas around 1900 and then mainly cultivated in California. They're considered ugly almonds. They're like an ugly heirloom tomato, if you will. They taste better. They're higher in protein, higher in micronutrients, but because they're not quote unquote pretty, you don't see them in a bulk bin in a Whole Foods. They're almost all used by the candy industry. Like M&M Mars buys most of them and puts them in their candy. Anyway, I was able to source some samples and I was like, this is it. This is absolutely the almond we need to use for almond butter. It's amazing. And so then I sought out, you know, who's growing these almonds sustainably? What do I know about almond agriculture? What are some of the big pitfalls? And, you know,
water consumption, bees.
Those are the two big ones right there.
Sorry.
Those are it. Those are the two big ones.
I hate to jump in, but
no, you nailed it. And so we came across this, group of orchards, owned by Treehouse Almonds. It's a company out in California. They're certified pollinator friendly, and they have amazing water reuse in their farm. So they use comparatively very little water to cultivate their almonds, and they have on-site bee sanctuaries, basically, for the pollination. And it's just a perfect fit from us from a values perspective, because right. those are things we're also very passionate about, is taking care of the planet. It's actually in our mission statement to do so. And so that's all we use. We only source heirloom mission varieties, and we source them from that grower group. And then the ginger in that recipe. So I used to make my own trail mix all the time, you know, make my own, meaning, you know, pull different things from bulk bins way before Big Spoon. And one of my favorite things to put in a trail mix was crystallized ginger.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I don't know why I didn't think of it sooner, but a few years into Big Spoon's life, I thought, gosh, an almond butter with crystallized ginger in it would be so good. But then I started researching crystallized ginger, and it is so hard, at least it was then, to find a ginger that came from a truly transparent supply chain that was grown sustainably, where you actually know what the inputs are on the agriculture side. I tried for months and then finally came across this project called the Fiji Ginger Project, run by a group in California that has been working with a cooperative of farmers on the island of Fiji to grow ginger and cane, sugar cane, that they use to crystallize it on site.
That is worth a trip.
I know. Megan and I talk about it all the time. We've got to go.
I mean, come on. It's an excuse. It's a write-off. It's a write-off.
It's a write-off. I know.
Who else gets Fiji as a write-off, Mark?
No. Are you interested in dog sitting? We have wonderful dogs.
No, I'm interested in joining you. Sorry, you're going to think it's a vacation, but you're going to be working.
I love it. Long story short on that, I ordered some, tasted it. It was phenomenal ginger. So that's all we use. And it's one of the few nut butters that Whole Foods recently introduced to a couple of new regions this year. So it's one of our best sellers. And it's one that I love telling the story behind because of those two main ingredients.
Yeah, that sounds great. I loved crystallized ginger too. And, you know, when I first saw it, Fiji ginger, I'm not familiar with this flavor. I didn't think about the crystallized part, but it is great in a trail mix or, you know, snack. There's so much more that we can talk about, but I really want to get to, unfortunately, the questions that I have to ask at the end. And I've watched from afar. We have neighboring planets of friends, I think. And I've tasted your butters throughout the years. And honestly, when I was in Durham in January in the Durham Hotel, there was a little bar that saved my life one day because I didn't have breakfast and was going to run, do some work. And it was delicious and wonderful. And I was so happy to have it. You don't just make jarred things. You make a lot of other things. But you are still so inspired, and I suspect still really enjoy eating nut butters and nuts, right? So what's making you hungry? What's next?
Gosh, yeah, I wish Megan were here to comment on my nut butter consumption, because it's one of her favorite things to joke about, because I do eat a lot of our nut butter every day, and our bars, which originated, by the way, from Megan. She gets credit for the bars. She was making our bars when we started dating as homemade energy bars, and then started incorporating the nut butter I was making into them, and we realized that they were good enough to sell.
That's great. Yeah, they're excellent. So what is the next step?
What's making me hungry right now and I think excited about the future of Big Spoon Roasters is it feels like we're on the cusp of some really fun growth. We're moving from our current facility that we've been in for 9 years to a larger one in Hillsboro, just 6 miles away. And that really excites me because of what that could mean for the community and for our team. I mean, we're like elbows to elbows in this little space, and we've made it work, but it's going to be so much better for our team and for, I think, our business to be in this larger space. And just the innovation that will allow us to have as well, because we have a limited batch program, if you will, where we release a new nut butter every quarter. And each one of those kind of pushes the definition of what a nut butter can be. but we can only do one per quarter because we just don't have room in our space to do more than that.
And it pushes you creatively, not only your market and your end user, but you creatively. So that could really help innovation inside the company, right?
Absolutely. I have a long list of recipes that I want to work on, and we just don't have room to do it. So in the new space, I'm going to really be able to stretch out and tackle a bunch of these ideas with our team.
You didn't realize as you were helping others that you were getting a spark that was going to change your life as well, you know, creatively, like from the Peace Corps, because you knew that the Peace Corps was going to change you, but you didn't realize it was going to give you something.
Yes. I feel so lucky to be where we are as a business. And, mm-hmm. and even though we're still very small in the world of, you know, nut butter and packaged food, because at the beginning, the goal was just, you know, sell enough to sell out at the farmer's market and have enough to buy ingredients for the next mm-hmm. run. And then it was, gosh, if I could just sell enough to be able to leave my day job, so to speak, which I actually really liked at the time, but to really devote myself to this pursuit, that would be amazing. And then now for the business to employ both me and Megan and 14 other people, is incredible. And I see that the work we do has an impact on our community in positive ways, not just from an employment perspective, but we're fortunate in that we're able to give back to the community a little bit. And one of the ways we do that is through our community blend program, which, we've been doing for years, but we didn't really put a name on it until last year. So at the end of every nut butter run, there's a tiny bit that's left in the filler that we have to get out of the filler before the next nut butter goes in. And those two nut butters create these really serendipitous flavor combinations sometimes,
right.
Like chocolate, sea salt, and toasted coconut together, or Fiji ginger and chai spice together. Those are nut butters we can't sell because we don't have the labeling for that, but we can give them away to the community, to hunger-related organizations, to schools, and label them as community blend. And so we've been doing that, and
that's fun.
It's really fun.
And good.
Well, I hope so. And we get great feedback on it. And sometimes people are like, you should really, you know, put those two together all the time and sell it.
Well, what's one aspect of this job that meshes with the natural aspect of your personality?
Definitely the creative outlet that is recipe R&D. I'm a cook. I'm not a baker. It's so hard for me, frankly, to write down a recipe. Like, I've had to really teach myself to do that. I'm an intuitive cook. I love doing it. It's my form of meditation, but I never make something the same way twice. But with a packaged food, you can't operate that way. You've got to nail a recipe and then be able to reproduce it. But it's that early stage of R&D that I get so excited about. And I'm always working on recipes, but, there's nothing better than just having the blank canvas and an idea and then start roasting nuts, start milling them at different textures, start mixing in different ingredients and seeing what you get, tasting it, and then going to iteration number two. That is what gets me so excited every day.
It's fun. Yeah. It sounds really fun, like Willy Wonka fun.
It's so fun.
That's why my face is like, yes, yes. You can't see it, but I was like, yes, that sounds so fun. So what's keeping you up at night?
Well, there's so much uncertainty in the world. I try not to let that get to me because, you know, we are, like it or not, part of a global supply chain. You know, our cashews come from a grower in Vietnam. We use sunflower that comes from Ukraine and we haven't been able to get it. And I don't complain about that because the people in Ukraine are going through far worse than anything I can imagine or that has anything to do with us not being able to get sunflower for a food product. But I do worry about how just overall supply chain issues could affect our business to stay alive and keep doing what we're doing. We have amazing support in our community. We have amazing support in the retail businesses that we work with. But I want job security for our employees. I worry about that sometimes, you know, about us not being able to get a key ingredient that goes in, you know, all the products that we need to ship to, Whole Foods, let's say, or, you know, one of our bigger customers, or glass jars. We've had to really scramble to find glass jars a couple of times.
And it was very stressful, but thankfully we haven't had a gap in supply.
And just heads up, no plastic, glass, no palm oil, coconut.
No palm oil and only coconut oil in a couple of products. And it's in there, for taste and texture. Palm oil is only used for convenience. It's a filler. It's an emulsifier. It's the number one cause of deforestation in Southeast Asia. And it's in a crazy number of products.
And including most of the peanut butter, even the natural ones.
Yeah. Yep.
Natural.
That's right. Natural with quotation marks.
That's right. If it says peanut butter spread, think about it. Okay. So I have something that I reserve for Southern Fort guests, and it is this question, and it really is my magic picnic basket question, which is, I talk about this often, but in the culinary realms, we sit around and we talk about food all the time. And a lot of times we talk about if you had one more meal to eat, and it's kind of that death row meal conversation. I don't believe in the death row. I don't believe in the death penalty. So I instead want to bring you a picnic basket full of things that bring you life. So with this basket, I can time travel. I can go back and ask somebody to make one more bite, maybe even in Zimbabwe, maybe even you, of one more thing that you could taste. I can source for you wherever you would like, and I can cook just a little bit. So I would love to just put some things in that basket. What can I bring you?
What a fantastic question. Well, there has to be a Smith County watermelon from Mississippi.
Love.
Yep. There has to be summer tomatoes.
Any variety? People have specifics.
German Johnson is pretty amazing.
And definitely never refrigerated.
Do not refrigerate those.
Or any tomato.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, peanuts in the shell, I'm a sucker for those. Even though we make nut butter, some peanuts in the shell that have been fresh roasted, I love those. I eat those anywhere. Some good crusty bread from, we are blessed in the Triangle, North Carolina, with bakeries.
I wrote about it for Delta Sky Magazine.
There you go.
Before Delta Sky Magazine went out, but yeah.
Yeah, sourdough bread.
Amazing bakeries.
Yeah. And then some red Russian kale from Eco Farm. Shout out Eco Farm. John Soner in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I need something to build a fire. That's my thing. I love a little sear on food. Like, I love it. With a fire and salt, like, I feel like you can make anything taste good.
That sounds great. Well, I can get you some high-end kindling. How about that?
Fantastic.
And you can use the basket, too. Feel free to burn it. Well, if people want to learn more about Mark Overbay and Big Spoon Roasters based in Durham, North Carolina, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. I am going to have links there as well as images so you can see the face and the beautiful product behind this show. Of course, if you like what you hear, you can experience it too. The South is full of so many wonderful people making so much wonderful stuff, and you can meet them and you can eat their work. You can have delicious food anytime, anywhere, if you just know where to look. And so that's one of my great jobs in life, and I take it very seriously, is I love to point you to a place to find good food. And today it is Nut Butters, and I cannot wait to get a spoon. Maybe even a big spoon, Mark, to get into these jars. Thank you so much for taking the time when you're in Charleston. And I can't wait to have another conversation.
Thank you so much. It was such a fun conversation.
Hello, and welcome to Talking With My Mouthful. About 8 days ago, the J.M. Smucker Company voluntarily recalled certain Jif brand peanut butter products that were made and manufactured in Lexington, Kentucky. I wanted to bring that up. I had already scheduled to chat with Mark Overbay before this occurred, but it's just an example of some of the supply chain issues that happen with large commodity companies sometimes. It's an outbreak of salmonella, and there are certain infections linked to certain Jif peanut butter products. I am simply here providing more peanut butter information because I couldn't help but include this in our supply chain conversation. And I just want to let everybody know there's so much information out there. It's easy to miss things like this, but there are lot numbers available online. If you just Google 2022 Jif brand recall, and also just know that there are going to be other products that are included in this recall because the peanut butter has been used in a lot of different products, from a protein power snack to Rich's peanut butter cups to some chocolate candy and fudge that was sold at Walmart. You really just want to make sure if you have Jif on the shelf that your lot number isn't part of this, and also just inform yourself a little bit more. So, hate to be the bearer of bad peanut butter news, but there it is. And in the meantime, I'm going to be scooping with my big spoon roasters. Have a great week.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations. But in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?